We're in Melbourne this week speaking with two 30-something entrepreneurs, Chris Guy and David Maloney from the Avant-Garde Financial Group. While already experiencing success, Chris and David are continuing to build a multidisciplinary advice business proposition that combines financial planning and mortgage advice together with their life and general insurance advice services. Listen to Chris and David as they reflect on what their key learnings have been to date in the development of their advice business and how they're positioning for further success. We're talking today to Chris Guy and David Maloney at the Avant-Garde Financial Group here in Melbourne. G'day Chris, g'day David.
G'day Peter.
Thanks for joining us. Can you give us a brief description of your business as it is today, who your clients are, a little bit more about your business?
Yeah, sure. So the Avant-Garde Financial Group consists of three businesses: financial planning, mortgage broking, and general insurance. The first two, financial planning and mortgage broking, the clients we target, they're barristers, medical specialists, and allied health professionals, such as osteos, podiatrists, chiropractors. The overarching theme there is that they're all self-employed, and they all tend to be quite goals-driven. General insurance is probably its own beast in itself, and Chris runs more of that. I know you could probably touch a bit more on the GI side of the business.
Yeah, look, the general insurance business is ranges, has a lot of consistency with the financial planning and the mortgage broking business. A lot of those clients are also general insurance clients, professional indemnity, business insurance. We also have a range of manufacturing and property related clients, so more your traditional commercial insurance type stuff.
Okay, so how did the business evolve to offer key advice planks such as financial advice, mortgage broking, general insurance? What's the story there?
Yeah, so I left the large dealer group at the end of 2007, and although the legislation would tell you otherwise, I've never really seen the distinction between financial planning and mortgage broking. Yeah. I've always seen them as one and the same. So from an early start, probably mid-2005, we started offering debt advice. We found that a lot of the times, the first time people really needed any sort of advice was in relation to obtaining their first home and how to save their deposit and what was involved in there in doing so. So we've never really seen the distinction between those two. So that's always just been one and the same. And then my father was in financial services. He was a ex-insurance broker and he retired at the end of 2014. So that's where the commercial insurance aspect comes into it.
Okay, but you came from a large financial advice licensee. Did you take any learnings from that as you began your own business in 2007, Chris?
Yeah, I sure did. And I think a lot of that's playing out with the Royal Commission at the moment. I learned a lot of what not to do. And that was probably the primary reason why I left at that time in 2007. I saw a lot of the issues at play at the moment, a lot of the structural issues and a lot of the conflicts, which I wasn't happy with or wasn't comfortable with. So I took that opportunity to step outside the large dealer group and set up my own business.
All right then. So David, earlier you were talking about the particular speciality or predominant occupations of the clients that you serve, but their characteristic was that they're all small businesses. How did that come about though, the lawyers, the doctors, how did that particular occupational group come to be a specialisation for Avant-Garde?
Yeah, I mean, initially I was fortunate enough, one of my best mates was a barrister and he was the head of like the Young Barristers Association and so forth, and he referred new barristers to our business. Over time, we established really strong relationships with some clerks, and anyone that's new to join the bar, they tend to refer them onto us, and even existing barristers, they also refer onto us. I guess they're the traditional centres of influence in that industry, and they can direct really quality clients to our business. Chris established a fantastic network with the osteos, with the association. We're probably one of the more prominent brands, I think, in the osteo community. Is that probably fair to say?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Yep. In the financial services space. I think identifying quality service of influence, and that's really helped our business grow organically, I guess, over the last 11 years.
All right, thank you. Now, you both would appear to be in your 30s, is that correct?
Yes.
And does the age of your client base reflect your respective ages to an extent?
To an extent, I would say it certainly does. I think our client base, you know, would generally be from
10 years either side, I think.
Yeah, probably not 10 years on the lower side, but certainly above 30 to 45 would be a fair representation of our clients. Yeah.
So it'd be reasonable to suggest that you will be continuing on this advice journey with your clients as they continue to evolve in their own careers and occupations?
Yeah, spot on. It's almost a Maslow hierarchy of needs sometimes. Like, first it was getting the home, then it starts becoming about things that are around the family, and we envisage that becoming, you know, things around the estate going forward.
Sounds like a pretty reasonable plan for in terms of long-term business development. Right. Now, I understand you've experienced business growth mm-hmm. over recent years. What do you put it down to? Is it the fact that you do specialise in a couple of particular areas, or what other factors have contributed to the growth of Avant-Garde over the last little while?
I think there's a number of factors that have contributed to that growth. I think the multiple service offering in terms of the different disciplines that we do provide our clients. I think also the intimate understanding of our clients' personal and financial circumstances, so whether it's professionally and the personal circumstances as well, has allowed us to identify needs and become their trusted advisor in a lot of ways. So we have a lot of clients who will come to us and ask us on our opinions on certain things, which invariably may or may not lead to additional services that we can provide them. And then also being able to develop a intimate understanding and knowledge of particular occupations and the lifestyle that they will experience within that career has allowed us to...
Okay, so it's the focus to an extent that's helped you identify who you are and how you add value?
Absolutely, yes.
Sure.
All right, so when talking about this multi-level approach in terms of the services that you deliver, that Avant-Garde delivers its clients, one of them is retirement planning. Chris, I was wondering if you could reflect on that, because speaking with you today, it seems to me that a lot of your clients would be a fair way off retirement.
Look, that is by and large correct. However, touching back to my father being in the financial services industry before I was, we do have a number of clients who were clients of my father's originally, who are now clients of ours, and they tend to be a little bit older, so they are retirees. So I do provide the retirement planning and the transition from working across into retirement, so the structuring of income streams, Centrelink entitlements, and the advice required about that going forward.
Okay then, and David, what's your background? We've got from Chris that he's a second generation, effectively, financial advice, but running his own race most certainly. What's your background?
Yeah, look, I mean, Chris and I actually met each other in 2007. We were in the same office just in Collins Street. We're in a shared office working off the same AFSL, but I just finished university and was looking to build a book of business straight away. In 2007, at the peak of the market, kind of counterintuitive in the sense that people would probably look at that as a bad time to probably start, but it was a really good learning lesson for myself and I think Chris as well. We didn't have walked the expectations of what markets can do, and we saw how bad it could get. Chris and I got along really well. We knew we had different personalities and they were complementary. And then I think in 2011, we decided to merge. We were doing the same thing, targeting similar demographics, and thought it made a lot of sense.
Okay, so I guess you're going to tell us that as partners, you do get along very well, but as you said, David, you've got complementary skills. Is there any message for your peers, your colleagues that are listening about if you are in business with somebody else, any learnings? Is it all roses, or is there sometimes issues that have come up that have helped to make the business a better business?
Look, I think anyone listening today, if they've got clients who have been in business, would have some war stories of businesses and partnerships that have gone bad. So the only advice that I would suggest, and you know, we bang on about it a lot with our clients, is to, before you enter into any sort of arrangement like this, is to assume the worst and map out your exit plan and what that looks like and how that works. And you know, we spent a lot of time before we actually officially merged doing that, putting in place partnership agreements, buy-sell agreements, you know, all that sort of stuff. Mm. And it's like anyone, or, you know, if you talk about these things and you identify these issues and how that looks, you know, you minimise the risk of misunderstanding and the likelihood of any issues arising. So I guess my advice would be just to go into it with open eyes. Don't think it's all going to be rosy.
Right.
And just make sure the structures are in place.
Okay, so you raise a critically important point about exit plans and the importance of exit plans in any partnership business. Again, in your mid-30s, have you also been looking at succession planning in your business, or is it a little bit early for that?
It's a little bit early. Yeah. But having said that, we're always trying to improve the business and have the business sale ready to extract the most value out of it. However, succession planning hasn't been a major focus. It's not a major concern.
Right, okay. So we've talked about some of the critical elements in your business, the notion of specialisation, the various advice planks that form the foundation of your advice business. But are there any other critical elements that have led to the success, the obvious success of a growing practice?
One thing I think that sometimes gets not neglected but isn't talked about a lot is we're always talking about advice and the value of advice and delivering advice, but I think the implementation side, that's something that we really pride ourselves on. And I think we do that really well, and I think our clients really value that. We take that off their plate.
Right. Can you expand a little bit on that, what you mean by the implementation process?
Yeah, so it's just, I think you can provide all the best advice in the world, but unless you implement it correctly, it's meaningless or almost devalues that advice in a sense as well. So we take a really proactive approach in making sure we take care of everything, take everything off the plate of the client, and see it through to the end. It's a bit of a mantra with us. We kind of make sure that, you know, we're not going to leave them high and dry. We're going to see it through to the end.
Okay. So in finishing up, a question to the both of you. Learnings. What learnings do you take from your experiences so far? And would there be, if you had your time again, anything you'd do differently as you're building this advice practice? Chris?
Where do we start?
No, look, it's not where we start. Look, I mean, everything that we've done and failed at has, you know, led us to where we are today. Having said that, though, I would, ideally, I'd like to think that I would learn to say no a lot sooner and identify those things that I really do enjoy and I am passionate about, rather than trying to provide, you know, a blanket service to everybody.
Okay, so that no relates to certain clients, perhaps?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, certain clients, certain types of clients, certain personalities, people who are looking for a particular type of advice. Yeah. You can spend a lot of time trying to work with those people, satisfy those people, and you never will in some cases. And so we've learned that in a number of occasions. So just being able to identify that, and I guess that also, you have to be able to identify internally what you're passionate about and where you really want to focus, and then being true to that.
Okay, thank you, Chris. David?
Yeah, I think touching on Chris, we would have started a lot earlier on identifying the ideal client. It's something we do really well now, but if we were to go back 10 years ago, we were just a jack of all trades in a sense, just trying to see what's kind of stuck somewhere. But I think focusing on the ideal client, we're passionate about the demographic we target, and we really enjoy that as well.
And it sounds like really that's a great strong message for other advisors out there about the value of focusing on the ideal client.
Oh, spot on. It's hard to let go sometimes. I think we're getting better at letting go. But it's something that I think reaps rewards in the long term.
I mean, the ideal client gets thrown around a lot, doesn't it? I mean, the term ideal client, but being able to identify your ideal client and the type of person or the people you want to deal with.
People we like, ultimately.
Yeah, that's right.
And that you get along with, you can build a rapport with. I think that's where Chris and I, we probably appeal to different people as well. So that's where we play off each other a bit as well.
Chris Guy, David Maloney, Avant Garde Financial Group, thank you for your time.